I want you to know I'm incredibly happy right now that it was below 70. Many of you, I understand, are going through the stages of grief related to the weather. I am not. So I will try really hard to get, you know, gather up all the pastoral sensitivity I can and not gloat in your face about the situation. But I'm very happy. So I've had a very nice weekend. I hope you have too. Yesterday, I went to, I think it's called Brandon Youth Theater. Happens at our sister church that likes to call itself our mother church, Sefner Presbyterian. They had Wizard of Oz over there. So I thought that Angela's thing about the llamas and the things and the bees and the squirrels, I'm sure she said squirrels, was perfect because I've been thinking about Oz. You know the story, Dorothy in Kansas. Maybe it's not surprising that the name Dorothy relates to lover of God, right? So Dorothy's in Kansas, and she's having a tough time. There's some class issues going on. That one lady's buying up the whole town. She probably bought up ConAgra down by the water. She's going to move it. Don't worry. So she's buying up the town, right? And the Auntie M and the uncle, whose name is not important, they're trying to raise Dorothy and everything. And there's some dog issues, and you know, there's a lawsuit coming, and Dorothy runs away, and eventually she falls asleep, and then it goes to color. You remember that, the first time you ever saw that? Man, it was black and white, then it went to color. I spent a lot of time as a little kid thinking, did it just all used to be? Was the whole world in black and white? So anyway, it's terrific, and she encounters three characters that are important for us because they all want something, don't they? They all want something a little different. We've got the first one she meets is who?
Scarecrow.
Right, Scarecrow. And what does the Scarecrow want? Apparently he wants to be in show business. He's it's good that they all sing too because that's... Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm not going to do it, Tara. I don't care if you can play it. I'm not going to do it. Isn't it great in musicals how everybody knows the songs, though? Isn't that great? Like, oh, and we all know the words, and we all can rhyme at the end of the line. It's great. So at any rate, he wants a brain, right? Then she meets the Tin Man. The Tin Man wants what? Good. And then after she meets the Tin Man, the third and last character is the lion. Some people immediately want to call him the Cowardly Lion, that's a value judgment. Because you'd want him on the session. Man, oh man. He's good. He's gonna know. He's going to scan the room. He's going to tell you where the threats are coming from. It's good to have the Cowardly Lion around. And what does the Cowardly Lion want?
Courage,
right? Good. So... what's amazing about the story, I mean, and we've kind of dealt with the story our whole lives, and it comes in and out of fashion. It gets made and remade. All the characters know what they want, right? And they even have a little song about it. But today in the reading, Jesus asks a very powerful question. In the reading earlier in the Gospel of Mark, from chapters ago, Jesus says, "But who do you say that I am?" That's a powerful question. That's a question about our faith. Who do we believe Jesus is? Who is Jesus for us, right? That matters. If Jesus is your Savior, that's different than if Jesus is your brother. If Jesus is your Lord, that's different than if Jesus is, if you want to talk about Jesus as your master or Jesus as the prophet. These are all different identities. They're not mutually exclusive, but they're different shadings of meaning, right? But now the question that Jesus asks is, what do you want me to do for you, right? That's a powerful question. Now, maybe the blind man thought that that was a dumb question. But I think it's a good question for us. What do we want Jesus to do for us? Let's hold that and just back up a little bit and be aware that Jesus is asking the question, but first, before Jesus asks the question, Jesus calls us. It's almost as if Jesus calls us to this question, right? If we talk about calling, we want to think about the word vocation. That's our calling, our vocation. What are we called to do? Remember the Joan Gray question, which is excellent. What are we called to be and do in this place where we find ourselves? It's a question that the session's been thinking about. It's a question I've inflicted on you many times in this room. What are we called to be and to do, both passively and actively, what are we called to be and to do in this place, First Presbyterian Church of Brandon, in this place where we find ourselves? Now, not then, but now, what are we called to do now, right? This is the question of vocation. Now, one of our Presbyterian writers, who's an incredibly important to me and to lots of us, has inflicted a lot of influence on us over the years, is Frederick Buechner. And I just want to share with you something that Frederick Buechner said, because you're only about a half a step away from it if any Presbyterian ever talks about vocation. So let's just go ahead and take the half step, and here it is. And we have time, so I'm going to read it to you. I just love that idea. It takes much time. So, which reminds me of something else, but we don't have time for that. So this is his little piece about vocation. He says, it comes from the Latin vocare, to call, and it means the work that we're called to do by God. There are all different kinds of voices calling you to all different kinds of work. And the problem is to find out which is the voice of God rather than of society, say, or the superego, or self-interest. By and large, a good rule for finding out is this. The kind of work God usually calls you to is the kind of work, A, that you need most to do, right? The work you need most to do, and B, that the world most needs to have done, okay? Got to track with that, A and B. If you really get a kick out of your work, you've presumably met requirement A. But if your work is writing TV deodorant commercials, chances are you've missed requirement B. On the other hand, if your work is being a doctor in a leper colony, you've probably met requirement B, but if most of the time you're bored or depressed by it, chances are you've not only bypassed A, but probably aren't helping your patients too much either. And this is where he turns on the heat. It's really good. If you didn't think it was good before, or if you weren't paying attention, or if you're thinking about Heifer Market, or something else, or if the Bucks are going to beat the Bengals, tune in now. Neither the hair shirt nor the soft berth will do. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Oh, that's so good. No wonder he's ordained to write books in a silo in Vermont. Our vocation is the intersection of where our deep gladness and joy and the world's deep hunger and need meet. Right? Jesus calls us to this intersection. He calls us to this place, and he says, what do you want me to do for you? The assumption is that we believe he can do something for us, that we have some beliefs about who Jesus is and what Jesus does. And if there are 346 people in this church, and I know that there are 346 different ideas and shadings of who Jesus is and what Jesus can do. But nevertheless, he asks us this question. We're marked by this question. What do you want me to do for you? And I wish it was as easy as the scarecrow and the tin man and the lion. I wish I knew what I wanted. I wish I knew that I needed a brain or a heart or some courage, or how to finish every line in a rhyme and sing all the melodies. I don't know that, right? We struggle. We struggle with, what? Well, I don't know. Like the blind man, I have experiences of not being whole, of feeling like I'm in pieces somehow, of feeling not pulled together. I'm not an integrated person all the time. I can feel myself being pulled in lots of directions, or I can feel myself kind of laying around, like that funny little scene where the scarecrow says, you know, took my legs, threw them over there, took my arm, threw it over there. It's like, yeah, I've had days like that. This disintegration. So when Jesus puts this question to us, what do you want me to do for you? We realize we've been called to this question, we've been marked by this question, and now we're into kind of a phase of discernment, right? That's a churchy word. People love to say it. Oh, I'm really in discernment right now. Really? You're not also on the Muppet Show? Well, no, I am, but I'm also in discernment. I'm trying to figure out what it is I'm supposed to be and to do in this place where I find myself. You know, this is the work that we have to do as a congregation. It's always the work we have to do, but I feel that we're really called to this work right now in the life of this congregation. You know, we think about 25 years from now, what are things going to look like? You know, we were in Kansas. We're not in Kansas anymore now, but we were in Kansas with my friend John, our friend John and Deb, and John's got this new job. He's president of Bethel College. And more than ever, I've told him this. I don't know if he really believes me or not. He might just be nodding and saying yes, or like you guys do sometimes. I said, more than anything, I said, you and I have more in common now that you're the president of a small college and I'm a pastor. It's very similar. And I said, and John, you have the amazing, I guess it's a gift, that you've never served as an administrator at a college in the fat years. It's always been lean. You've always had to do more with less. And I said, that's the same with me. You know, July 1954, the good old days are gone, right? They might not have been that good in the first place, but they're gone. We will always, as First Presbyterian Church Brandon, and as the PCUSA, we'll always have to do more with less, right? Always. So we're in discernment, and we're trying to figure out, what are we going to do? And what do we want to do? Can we be clear on that? What is it that we want to do? It's okay to do what you want to do. It's okay for that deep gladness to intersect with the deep hunger of the world. That's okay. And so the psalmist kind of gets in there too. You know, what should I render unto the Lord for all the good things that God has given to me? I know I'm going to lift up the cup of salvation and call on the name of the Lord. What do I do after that? What kind of a life do I live in response to all God has done for me? We're marked by questions. We're marked by questions. And I know some of you would just rather have me answer. And I've tried that before, and you didn't believe me. I've been in classes with people, and they've asked a question. I've given my answer. You know what they said? I don't think that's right. This is another reason why I love Presbyterians. You can't tell them what to do, and you can't give them the answers. Because I've tried, and you didn't believe me. And you shouldn't have either. Because I can't give you your answer. You have to find your answer. right? We have to find our answer together. We've been marked by these questions. Who do you say that I am? What do you want me to do for you? And we have got to give the answer out of faith. And then that changes everything.